The first reading this morning comes from a most excellent essay by Christine Rosen, written in 2007, so it's a little dated, in the New Atlantic magazine, a journal of technology and society.
For centuries, the rich and the powerful documented their existence and their status through painted portraits, a mark of wealth and a bid for immortality. Portraits offered intriguing hints about the daily life of their subjects, professions, ambitions, attitudes, and most importantly, social standing. Such portraits can be understood as painted anthropology, with much to teach us, both intentionally and unintentionally, about the culture in which they were created. Self-portraits can be especially instructive. By showing the artists both as they see their true selves and as they wish to be seen, self-portraits can at once expose and obscure, clarify and distort. They offer opportunities for both self-expression and self-seeking. They can display egotism and modesty, self-aggrandizement, and self-mockery. Today, our self-portraits are democratic and digital. They are crafted from pixels rather than paints. On social networking websites like MySpace and Facebook, our modern self-portraits feature background music, carefully manipulated photographs, stream of consciousness musings, and lists of our hobbies and friends. They are interactive, inviting viewers not merely to look at, but also to respond to the life portrayed online. We create them to find friendship, love, and that ambiguous modern thing called connection. Like painters constantly retouching their work, we alter, update, and tweak our online self-portraits, but as digital objects, they are far more ephemeral than oil on canvas. Vital statistics, glimpses of bare flesh, lists of private bands and favorite poems all clamor for our attention, and it is this timeless human desire for attention that emerges as the dominant theme of these vast virtual galleries. Although social networking sites are in their infancy, we are seeing their impact culturally. In language, where to friend is now a verb, in politics, where it is de rigueur for presidential aspirants to catalog their virtues on MySpace, and on college campuses, where not using Facebook can be a social handicap. But we are only beginning to come to grips with the consequences of our use of these sites for friendships and for our notions of privacy, authenticity, community, and identity. As with any new technological advance, we must consider what type of behavior online social networking encourages. Does this technology, with its constant demands to collect friends and status and perform by marketing ourselves, in some ways undermine our ability to attain what it promises, a sure sense of who we are and where we belong? The Delphic Oracle its guidance was, know thyself. Today, in the world of online social networks, the oracle's advice might be, show thyself. Friendship in these virtual spaces is thoroughly different from real-world friendship. In its traditional sense, friendship is a relationship which, broadly speaking, involves the sharing of mutual interests, reciprocity, trust, and the revelation of intimate details over time and within specific social and cultural contexts. Because friendship depends on mutual revelations that are concealed from the rest of the world, it can only flourish within the bounds of privacy. The idea of public friendship is an oxymoron.
The second reading is shorter. It comes from Ignacio Salone's 1942 novel, The Seed Beneath the Snow. Salone's books made a great impact on me when I was in seminary. The story is a very complicated one, but in this particular scene, a man named Bastiano is talking to his mother.
Excuse me, Ma, but you don't seem to understand the world we are living in. There's no private life anymore, and even the peasant on the land is a sort of employee who can't work without permission. And then, I'm not old enough to turn into a hermit. I need to see people. Really, you must excuse me. But you do seem to be living in another world. Have you no friends, my boy? Friends? Now I see that you want to make me laugh. There's been no such thing as friendship in our part of the world for a long time. Ma, haven't you noticed? What we have now is connections. Yes, that's the word. Connections. Let's not close our eyes to what's happening around us. Yes, right here in our part of the country. For the first time, perhaps in the whole history of this land, connections have taken the place of friendship. I'm sorry. There's no such thing as friendship around here anymore.
So let's begin this sermon with a confession. I am, by nature, one of those suspicious types who has never given up his immediate and severe reservations about the social networks. You know, MySpace, Friendster, Facebook, and so many more. They multiply like mushrooms. Mostly, my suspicion rose when I saw that someone I barely know or don't even know at all, could ask me to be their friend. The image that came to me as I read more and more about Facebook, for example, was that the path I've deliberately taken, most of my life, would suddenly abruptly slant off in a totally different direction if I signed up for Facebook, taking me to a flowerless, flat field with thousands of people I don't know or at all, crying out, "Welcome, friend," as they comment busily on my day-to-day life, made visible on the network. The image gave me chills, and I'm still shaking. I know, most of my colleagues do not recoil from this new way of communicating. I've been hearing for the last couple of years that email is entirely passé. Most of my colleagues, and many people in this congregation, and every other congregation I can think of, accomplish very good things with Facebook, especially like communicating urgent news about people, getting swift information around the health concerns of people in the congregation, which they then communicate to the lead ministers or the pastoral team. That's all good. All of this is completely terrific, and I admit it. And although not being on Facebook does tend to slow my communication with many young adults, I hear, for whom Facebook has been a norm for some years now, I don't think this is really all about generational stuff either. While it's true that the 5-year-old girl I was sitting next to at a dinner after a memorial service I conducted this week taught me 10 things about my up-to-date iPhone I had never figured out before, because she has grown up with such savvy technology from birth, I do know plenty of people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, inside and outside this congregation, who have mastered not only iPhone so they can talk face-to-face with their grandchildren, but the social network so they can keep up with relatives that are far away, friends that are far away, and so forth. So I'm not talking this morning because I'm older or whatever like that. I'm talking because I'm me, and you are you, and you will have different responses and reactions to all the things that I say, but that's good, because it's better that you be you and not me, and I'll be me. So sermons are very interactive that way. So I'm just exploring my own reservations here, which rise from reflecting on the journey of my own life for 62 years. I'm thinking out loud here, and I'm contemplating my life, and contemplative self-questioning is never a bad thing to do, it seems to me. So I told you that the strained usage of the word friend is the main focus of my suspicion. I suppose this is because it's the most grounded way, friendship that is, I've been moving through the world for these last 50 years. I've been very deliberate about being open to friendship, including surprising friendships, and I've dedicated a lot of my days to the cultivation of deep relationships with friends I've grown to love. The story of Owen and MZ this morning suggests that something very much like friendship is found even outside the human community in the animal world. They are different, these two animals. One's a mammal, one's a reptile. They're not alike in any possible way, yet they become friends. One is 130 years old, one is a baby hippo, just a few years old. I've witnessed dogs and cats, historic enemies according to folklore, relating to each other as similar friends in their common house. And even though it's just human interpretation, perhaps, that we call this stuff friendship, I don't know. I can't speak to the essence of it, not being an animal scientist. It sure looks like friendship to me. I especially like the last line in the story. Sometimes our most important friends are those we least expected. That certainly has been true for me. I suspect that every individual in this room has some history of friendship in their lives. It all is going to be different from person to person. There is no way of saying that friendship should be this way or friendship should be that way. Some people find it very difficult to make friends. They've told me so. And if they do make a friend, they value the friend very much. Some have maintained long friendships since childhood. In this congregation, several people have told me they have friends going back to kindergarten, which I think is astonishing. Others, because they moved around a lot as children, because they were army brats, whatever they're called, developed great skills, either of making new friends really quickly, or of choosing one or two friends they could communicate with, even if they were at some distance. Some find their friendships, they tell me, in their relationships to spouses or in-laws. I know one woman whose best friend had married her ex-husband, and they all vacationed together every year. It's a marvel. And friendships of a deeper kind can, yes, indeed, be cultivated despite great distances with the help of technology, emails and Skype, things like that. Just wanted you to understand that I'm not entirely a Luddite here. I admit that technology in any age has given us all many, many boons in the area of communication. I know my own deep friendship with Bonnie Carrier down in Chile was entirely based on the older technology of long handwritten letters delivered by planes when she and her husband were working in the deserts of Algeria and then for 10 years in the jungles of Mozambique. I never went to either of those countries or spent any time with Bonnie in person for over 20 years. Yet our friendship deepened only because of the technology of airmail, and now that she's settled in Chile, long phone calls. In my case, three friendships in my life have developed almost immediately without any slow buildup, which was a surprise to both sides. I'm thinking of my friends Doug Robson in California, William Green in San Antonio, and my Columbus friend, Ajay Baranski. One conversation with each of them, just one, and we were drawn together immediately into the bright path of friendship, mutually recognized at the time, which we still walk together. Other friendships developed because we had important work to do together. Richard Sinkoff and I took care of his partner and my best friend, Stefan Missler, for the year before he died. We had known each other, of course, Richard and I, and I liked him, but I think friendship must mean something more than liking somebody. We became friends by shouldering the heavy responsibilities of taking Stefan to doctor visits or to the hospital for severe tests, cooking for him, or just sitting with him as he suffered miserably. This week, on Valentine's Day, we marked the 17th anniversary of Stefan's death. Richard cooked a kosher supper out in San Francisco for friends who both knew Stefan and didn't know Stefan. And I wrote and emailed a portrait of our friendship that Richard then read aloud at dinner. Me here in Columbus, not being in San Francisco, I lit the yahrzeit candle, the anniversary candle, read the Kaddish, the Jewish prayer of mourning, and yes, I wept in my office. 17 years, 17 minutes. The heart of friendship and love scarcely can tell the difference. Like Owen and MZ, Stefan and I were very different from each other and had almost nothing in common. But our friendship was a great gift to us both. Some folks have the emotional makeup to befriend many people and maintain and cultivate those friendships. Others are so made that they prefer to call very few people their dear friends and share nothing intimate with mere acquaintances. There can be no rules around this because we're all different, each of us totally unique, and one approach is not better than another. I'm not going to say anything like that at all. Since it's President Day weekend, let me quote the presidents of the holiday to support what I just said. President Washington, for instance, kept very few friends, but they were very important to him. Here are his elegant words from a letter to Bushrod Washington on the 15th of January, 1783. Be courteous to all, but intimate with few. And let those few be well tried before you give them your confidence. True friendship is a plant of slow growth and must undergo and withstand the shocks of adversity before it is entitled to that appellation, namely that name, friendship. Unlike Washington, Abraham Lincoln used the word friend so often and so freely that it seems to have been one of his favorite words. He even called his very bitter opponent, Stephen Douglas, my good friend, after the debates, and he meant it. They used to have supper together. In 1849, he even wrote this summary sentence to his friend Joseph Gillespie: the better part of one's life consists of friendships. And Lincoln really cultivated many, many deep friendships in his life, including, he once wrote, friendship with myself, which he deemed the most important of all. But despite the broad continuum in friendship practice between Lincoln and Washington, I thought it might be best to offer a definition of friendship to balance out both poles. This is from Christine Rosen's reading earlier, and it's a great definition, I think, very solid. Friendship is a relationship which, broadly speaking, involves the sharing of mutual concerns, mutual interests, reciprocity, trust, and the revelation of intimate details over time and within specific social and cultural contexts. Because friendship depends on mutual revelations that are concealed from the rest of the world, it can only flourish within the boundaries of privacy. And then she adds a little testily, the idea of public friendship is an oxymoron. She writes that admittedly opinionated sentence because she shares with me a suspicion of using the word friend to mean anything which does not begin with respect for nurturing boundaries of privacy. Ignazio Salone's novel, The Seed Beneath the Snow, was written in 1942 as a sequel to his truly great novel, Bread and Wine. Long before computers, websites, and social networks, in the days of Mussolini and war, Salone was bemoaning the thinning out of the concept of friendship. There's been no such thing as friendship in our part of the world for a long time. Ma, haven't you noticed? What we have now is connections. Yeah, that's the word, connections. Let's not close our eyes to what's happening around us. Yes, right here in our own part of the country. For the first time, perhaps, in the whole history of the land, connections have taken the place of friendship. Again, these are strong words, critical words, but they're worth reflecting on. In some ways, long before I was reading novels by Salone or essays by Rosen or even working on my computer, I was reflecting on this whole idea of friendship almost all the time. I think I rather agree with President Lincoln that reflecting on friendship has defined my life. There were times in my childhood when I had very few friends, or I lost friends due to the overwrought emotions that seem to permeate many of us when we're middle school age. I had to thread my way through neighborhood friends who actually were bullies, I discovered later. And I had to decipher the concept of a fair weather friend, people who wanted me for something, but then when they didn't want me for the something, didn't want me. Or even some friends that I turned from myself when I was a teenager, because no one had ever told me, no adult had ever told me, that you might be erotically attracted to someone you've called a friend. And that idea scared me a great deal. And I was mad and resentful that no one had told me that was possible. But since then, I've learned how to deal with such confusing realities. Still, even then, I knew that friendship was something of a sacred concept, because in the church I went to, I heard that Jesus called his students, his disciples, friends. I call you my friends. I even heard that one religious group called the Quakers, usually, was actually called the Society of Friends after that statement attributed to Jesus in the Gospel of John. Such things made me realize how profound friendship might be. Ms. Rosen's worries about the new friendship are worth considering, I think. She raises many thoughtful questions. Like Salone, she thinks that many of the social sites are more about connections than necessary friendships. She asks, does this technology, with its constant demands to collect friends and status and perform by marketing ourselves, in some ways undermine our ability to attain what it has promised us, a sure sense of who we are and where we belong? The Delphic Oracle's guidance was, know thyself. Today, in the world of online social networks, the Oracle's advice might be, show thyself. I know that a surprisingly large number of people in this congregation are mourning this week because of sick friends, dying friends, or friends who have actually died recently. These were not small photos on a social network page, but people with whom they shared supper at holidays, people with whom they have shared the intimacies of the heart over many years. They are all grieving deeply and will for some time. As I said, 17 years later, I am still weeping for my best friend, Stefan, so I think I understand part of it at least. Oh, yeah, I suppose there's a chance I might get over my suspicion one day and get onto some social network. After all, some of you know how long I resisted even touching a cell phone, let alone getting one. And now I am using my iPhone several hours each day and actually get kind of agitated when I leave it in my office or forget it at home. I guess I can be worn down too eventually. And maybe one day I'll catch up with the rest of culture. But right now, I'd rather spend my time cultivating friendships in real time, reflecting on the spiritual nature of my life in terms of friendship, and finding my center and my grounding in that strength and in that love. What will you be doing?